Explorers call the Sahara Desert the Great Nothing. An endless emptiness stretches for thousands of miles across the face of North Africa. The Sahara is the world's largest desert, and there are as many stories of thirst and mirage as there are grains of Saharan sand. But there is also life in the desert, and two authors took in this formidable dry land and wrote a book about what they found. It's called Sahara, A Natural History, and Bruce Barcott has our review.
The Sahara is so big that if you stripped the continental United States of its glaciers, trees, grasslands, and lakes, and turned the whole thing into an ocean-to-ocean desert, you'd still have to add a quarter of Mexico to equal it. The place looms equally large in the Western imagination. Home to ruthless nomads, French legionnaires, and exotic cities like Timbuktu, the Sahara is the ultimate inhospitable foreign land. The Antarctic seems homey by comparison. And yet, as Mark DeVilliers and Sheila Hurdle write in their fascinating new book, Sahara, A Natural History, much of what we believe about the Sahara is a mirage. Consider the sand. It's said to swallow armies and smother villages, to move with menace in its grains. And it does. During a breezy 120-degree afternoon, the authors write that, quote, "Sand fills the ears and the nose and the reddening eyes and infiltrates the clothing. Drifting sand in every crack and crevice, sand in the tea glasses, sand in the food, a dismaying grit on the teeth." The thing about the Sahara, though, is that it's mostly not sand. The whole thing's less than 20% dune. When you caravan across the desert, you're mostly riding on hard stone and gravel, a path as firm and clear as a good-grade country road. What the authors find along those roads is a land slow to give up its traditions, which isn't necessarily good. Salt, gold, and slaves are ancient mainstays of Saharan commerce, and sadly, all three can still be had for a price. The bandits, whose clans have preyed on passing caravans for centuries, still ply their trade. For the feared Tuareg nomads of southern Algeria, highway robbery is a tradition embedded in their very language. In Tuareg, the verb, "he is free," also means "he pillages." It's not all bad news and banditry, though. DeVilliers and Hurdle write about the Sahara's well-documented expansion, but they also find evidence that the desert may not be growing so much as shifting its boundaries. And the same Tuareg tribes that raise bandits also produce brilliant guides whose code of the desert compels them to offer their last drop of water to a stranger. For all their knowledge of the Sahara, though, the authors maintain a frustrating distance from the desert. I think DeVilliers and Hurdle crossed the West Central African nation of Niger in a 20-day caravan. Now I say, I think, because their account of the experience is so sketchy as to be nearly theoretical. It's hard to say when they departed, where they were going, and why they traveled. At this and other points in the book, I kept hoping for less history and more travel memoir, the sort of journeying prose that makes writers like Pico Iyer and Jonathan Rabin such great companions. This isn't to say the book reads like a social studies text. There are moments that reach the poetic, as when DeVilliers and Hurdle ask a Tuareg elder to explain the vivid mirages produced by desperate thirst. What the dying see, the nomad explains, is not a vision of paradise. It is, he says, just the human spirit trying to escape its fate. In moments like these, we come to understand that the vast African nothingness is actually full of fascinating stories and tenacious life.
The book is Sahara, A Natural History by Mark DeVilliers and Sheila Hurdle, published by Walker & Company. Reviewer Bruce Barcott writes about the environment for Outside Magazine. In the far Canadian Arctic on Devon Island, a group of scientists spend the summer studying a place that's more like Mars than anywhere else except Mars. Reporter Robin White was there recently and kept a journal about his trip.
I'd been warned to keep away from the dogs, and at the beach there were great long lines of them chained up. They're sled dogs and not bred for friendliness. Apparently some of them are wolf hybrids. They spend most of the year tied up out in the elements waiting to be fed. Then in the winter they come into action, dragging the sleds across the pack ice. On the beach itself there was a sled pulled up with three fresh-killed seals dripping blood into the water. Five more on the beach. I suppose this is dog food.
Starting on Monday, October 21st, Living on Earth's website will present special daily installments from Robin White's journal of his Arctic adventure. You can see them all at loe.org. That's loe.org. And you're listening to NPR's Living on Earth.